I believe we have with us Rabbi Tuvia Singer, the anti-missionary. Rabbi Tuvia Singer, formerly a radio talk show host as well. So let me put on both Rabbi Tuvia Singer and Rabbi Shmuley Boteach. Okay, you're on the air. Go ahead. You have a question or comment?
Yes.
I can't hear. Who is on, please, Ben?
Rabbi Tuvia Singer. He's an anti-missionary.
Oh, I know Tuvia very well. Tuvia, so nice to have you on. In fact, I wanted to hear Tuvia's opinion on this book because for a very long time, and it's wonderful to... Where are you? Are you in Israel or the United States?
No, I'm in the United States right now, and Shmuel and I have had dinner together and so on. My sense on the book, obviously, I knew Chaim Akopi, Zechein Levracha, when he was alive. And obviously, much of, you know, as Rav Otech acknowledges in his introduction, he relies completely on that work, and it is. The concern I have is, obviously, one could say clearly that the writings of Paul, the 13 letters attributed to Paul, 7 of them are certainly authentic, are certainly contrary to everything that we find in Tanakh. We know that Paul is a bad guy in terms of how the God of Israel looks at him. The problem is, how do you say kosher Jesus? Meaning, how do you look at 4 Gospels and pick and choose certain texts that make Jesus appear Jewish or Jewish-minded, Pharisaic, and then ignore other statements which are, you know, you can't sort of pick and choose. And then saying, I'm a rabbi, I'm Shmuley Boteach, and I have great respect for him, please, and not, I'm not saying, but you're saying he's kosher. You don't know if he's kosher. We don't have one word written by Jesus. How do you know he's kosher?
First of all, let me welcome you to the program, even though I'm just a guest here myself. Tuvia is an amazing guy. He's a very good man with a very big heart, and he's given his life to the Jewish people, and I salute your work. And let me also say, Tuvia, I don't mind criticism of the book. Of course, you write an essay, you write a book, there's going to be positive reviews, negative reviews. I don't mind any scholarly challenges, and when you make a good point like you just did, I welcome it. It's the personal attacks I've endured that I dismiss. Or it's the book bans that give no reason for why the book is heresy, which is not. That's what I
do. Let me just say something. Shmuley is actually, his book is much more offensive to Christianity than it is to Judaism, in a sense, if one reads the book. But go ahead, Shmuley, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, so thank you for calling it, and I take your point. First of all, the book doesn't solely rely on Chaim Maccabee, although it relies mostly on Maccabee, and I think Maccabee really got it, and I salute his scholarship.
But by the way, in the foreword this week, Adam Gregman writes that he says that the scholar that you just quoted has been universally rejected by scholars since it appeared, that his book appeared.
Well, that's his problem.
It's just an opinion.
But look, to answer your question directly, Tuvia, it was Chaim Emden who said in the 18th century that the Nazarene, that Jesus, came to reaffirm Torah observance. He came to recommit the Jews to Jewish observance. So this theory predates Chaim Maccabee, it predates me, and it goes back to one of the great Talmudists of the past 1,000 years. And the theory has been written about by many people.
You know very well, no one knows what Jesus said. You know very well that not a single one of the Gospels are contemporaneous. You know that Josephus is partially or completely a hoax. Not a single contemporaneous historian could supply you with the hashgacha to say something that you knew was, you know, offensive. I'm not saying this in a derisive way, but you knew would be something that would alarm the Jewish community. To say he is kosher, I'm rabbi, you're not a basketball coach, I'm Rabbi Boteach, and say, declaring this is kosher, or, you know, that's what I think people are really shocked by.
Well, but Tuvia, in the final analysis, what the book demonstrates, and I do it chapter and verse, so I don't mind people coming back and saying that the source material is wrong, but the source material is there, that everything Jesus taught comes from the Torah, the Sermon on the Mount, the most famous speech of all time. I trace back verse by verse back to the Hebrew Bible.
So when Jesus says in Mark 20 that what goes into your mouth doesn't defile you, I mean, it says, is that true or is it not true? John 8:40, is that true when he calls the Jews the seed of the devil? I mean, Jesus
says
he's kosher.
No. As you well know, in my book, I look at both of those passages. As we both probably agreed, the book of John is a radical departure to the Synoptic Gospels. It bears no relation whatsoever to Mark, Matthew,
and Luke. We don't know if Matthew, Mark, or Luke bears any relationship. None of it is known.
Once you take that approach, we may as well not even discuss the subject because you're saying we don't know anything.
That's what I'm saying. There is no contemporaneous work. And you have the Chazal, the Rambam, what the Rambam says in Mishnah Torah, that there was no greater stumbling block. There was nobody, and he brings a very famous verse in the book of Daniel. Maimonides was the greatest decisor of Jewish law in Jewish history since Moses. So how could you say, and then again, I don't want to belabor this, and I know Shmuel, I know him personally, but I guess you want me to be straightforward. How do you declare as a rabbi, and I think this is what deeply surprises people, especially the time you know about the Mishnah, why say kosher rabbi, unless it's simply an exciting term, but really you aren't saying he's kosher. Are you saying that
let me respond. What I explain in the book is the Rambam cannot be, the Rambam bases himself on the Gemara, as you said. The Rambam and the Gemara cannot be speaking about Jesus of the Gospels. They're speaking about Jesus who was a student of Rav Shua ben Brachia, who died 130 years before Jesus of the Gospels. The Seder HaDorah says the same thing. There are two different Jesus.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I apologize.
And Josephus lists 22 major Yeshua, Jesus figures. And in fact, what I say in Kosher Jesus, that the Rambam and the Gemara's discussion of Yeshu, of Jesus, is not the Jesus of the Gospels, it's what Rabbi Yechiel of Paris said nearly 1,000 years ago.
Yeah,
so
we know Rabbi Yechiel.
So there's plenty of
the Gemara is being burnt up. We don't know
Just a moment. But the point is that there are plenty of Jewish sources, highly regarded Jewish sources, Rishonim, Achronim, that say A, that Jesus discussed in the Talmud is not the Jesus who's the founder of Christianity, not the Jesus of the Gospels. And we know for sure that the Gemara, who's discussing Jesus as a student of Shulam and Brachia, could not have been the founder of Christianity because the timing is on by at least 130 years.
It's all a non sequitur. I'm saying, just where does kosher Jesus come from? I understand neutral Jesus. We don't know. But how do you say kosher? That's the point. You're saying no negative.
Okay, so I'm answering. What I say is clearly exactly what Rabbi Yaakov Emden said. He says that Jesus was kosher too. He says that Jesus came to reinforce the Torah. He even goes further than I do in my book. He says that Jesus was a double blessing. Correct, Rabbi Singer? He says that Jesus brought a double blessing, a blessing to the Jews and a blessing to the Christians. Correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Therefore,
there it is. He made them kosher 300 years ago.
But again, you're quoting these texts as though they're true. How do you ignore John?
Rabbi Yaakov Emden? Do you believe he's true?
As it turns out, there were rabbis in history, including a professor at Bar Ilan University that said maybe Jews drank from that. I don't care about that. I'm talking about the decisor. We're not looking for an anomaly. When you have to go to Rabbi Yaakov Emden, the reason you go there is because it's an anomaly. An anomaly doesn't prove a point. It demonstrates the reverse. It means that this was something
funny
and rejected everything else. That's all. It's very clear.
Are you dismissing the
debate in 1242 with Nicholas Donnan, we don't know if they tried to save all the Gemara's name. We don't know if those texts were self-censored. But you don't quote those sources, that these texts very well might have been self-censored by the Jewish people, which we did, like we self-censored the Septuagint. The point, here's the question, because I don't have an argument if one would say, you know, I think Jesus may have been a good guy, and this really would tell me. I'm asking you, how do you say, I mean, there are thousands of people listening to your voice right now, how do you say that I know he is kosher? That's all. That's the only question.
That is exactly what the book sets out to prove. I don't say it. I bring chapter and verse to prove my point. And to the extent that you want to disagree with the point, every time I quote a source, you say that that source is an anomaly. Now, if you think someone like Rav Yaakov Emden is an anomaly and bears and has no gravitas, and the Seder Adoros, or the fact that the Gemara says that Yeshua ben Prachi had a student named Jesus who clearly could not have been Jesus from the Gospels. Every time I
we
quote a source, you're saying it's
we
an anomaly.
We agree with that.
Okay, so you agree
hold
with
hold
that?
Hold on, Toby. Let Toby ask his question. Go ahead, Toby. I'm sorry.
I don't, first of all, I have a great respect for Shmuley. I think, I say this with love, and I respect you as well.
Shmuel, let him ask you a question.
You mean well here, but I'm just saying it is patently. You've read the New Testament. I've read it a couple of times as well. It is patently incorrect to say, as a rabbi, that Jesus is kosher. You don't know what he was. You have no idea. You can't just search out for an 18th century rabbi and say, I'm going to hang on to him against the tides of history. That's all I'm saying. How do you go to kosher Jesus, Rabbi Yaakov Emden? Is that the deal? I mean,
I've quoted several sources besides Rabbi Yaakov Emden. But what really separates us, because we're clearly not going to agree on the sources, what clearly separates us, Tuvia, and I feel that this is what has separated me from the anti-missionaries like yourself, since the announcement of the book's publication, understandably, the anti-missionaries, you, Rabbi Emanuel Shochat, Michael Skobek, your job is to protect the Jewish community from missionary encroachment, from Christians who want to come into our community and prey on unsuspecting souls and get converted to Christianity. I get that, and God bless you, because we have to stop any kind of missionary effort against our people, obviously. And I, and as you well know, I've engaged in something very similar on many debates with Dr. Michael Brown, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes.
But times are changing, Tuvia, in that Christians are not primarily missionizing us there. Today, Christians primarily are the best friends we have. In fact, they may be the only friends, reliable, stalwart friends that the state of Israel has. 80 million born-again Christians in the United States are the reason why, one of the main reasons why, America is so strongly pro-Israel. So instead of seeing them as the enemy who are coming to steal our souls, i.e., let's work on counter-missionary efforts, I think we have to do the opposite. It is time for us to teach them about the Jewishness of Jesus as opposed to them teaching us about the Christianity of Christ. So that's the purpose of this book.
Well, these are two separate issues. I agree with you. And just so the listeners understand that there's a huge movement called premillennial dispensationalism and Christian Zionism that emerged in the 19th century. They love Israel. It's independent of the fact they also want to convert the Jews to Christianity. Those are two separate issues. Now, if you're asking the question, should we go to Christians for their support at a time that Israel faces an existential threat 1,000 kilometers east of it, of course we should. That's not what we're debating. I'm not trying to be divisive, but you're moving out of the way. The question is the statement kosher Jesus accurate or not? Do you have fundamental proof that he is, because you're saying he's a rabbi, and I mean this, you're not a...
Yes, I believe that I do.
Let's have you finish, and let's respond.
No, I don't want to. I just, you're saying kosher Jesus, not kosher Jesus, might have been kosher. I think if you said, we don't really know anything about him, except we do have some very authoritative, 99% of all of our sages said he was absolutely evil, not just neutral. But the question is, you say there's a possibility there may be Jesus, that he may have been an all right guy. That could be a good title. Paul was a wicked man who turned his back on the God of Israel. Definitely, you can say. But where do you call, how does one not become... It has nothing to do with support for Israel. Let's forget that. That's totally separate.
Let me ask this question. As far as Paul is concerned, and I've spoken to Professor Daniel Sperber and there are others who say that he was an evil person. He was sent by the rabbis to separate the Jewish followers.
He's making a mistake. Let me finish the thought.
And the thought
it's
was,
Peter,
because,
it's
hold
not
on.
Paul.
I'm sorry, Peter.
It's
okay,
it's
Peter.
It's,
okay, fine.
No, he says Paul, but he says it incorrectly. The legend is really Peter. People have been kept saying Paul, but the legend is Peter, not Paul. We know who Paul was. If Paul is so clear. This, anybody who has a familiarity with the Christian Bible, 27 books, knows the Gospels is no personality that emerges. We know nothing. When we look at Matthew, it's just a blank. But when you read Galatians, when you read 1 Thessalonians, the oldest books in the Christian Bible, when you read the book of Romans, it's three monumental works of Paul that set the DNA of Christian theology. You know that man. That man does not want Jew or Gentile.
Okay, so when he said Paul, he meant Peter, is what you're saying.
It's common mistake. This is a legend. It's actually this. I found some phenomenal sources for it. But one could just say it's a very strong legend that Peter himself was infiltrated the early Christian movement in order to push the way further from.
I don't subscribe to that at all. First, let me say, Tuvia, while I agree with many things you say about Paul, and Paul is heavily criticized in my book, Kosher Jesus, the one thing that Paul does that every Jew should learn from is something so monumental that I'm amazed that we missed it. Paul takes a look at the Jewish religion and says to himself, there is such beauty here. I cannot believe that the Jews have kept this to themselves. And he decides to start bringing it to the non-Jews. And he makes, let's call it Judaism light, the most successful idea in the history of the world. There are 1.8 billion Christians in the world, 1.1 billion Catholics.
Hold on, let Rav Shmuley finish. One at a time, gentlemen, one at a time. Let's Rav Shmuley finish.
Go ahead.
Okay. He makes it the most successful idea in the history of the world. And I look at that and I say to myself, why did Paul see the universal application of our values, of our tradition, and our wisdom, and we still don't see it? The Jewish people, and I'm not talking about proselytizing and converting non-Jews to Judaism, because we are not a proselytizing faith. One of the most beautiful things about our religion is that we don't believe that one has to upgrade one's existence to become a Jew in order to achieve proximity with God. We believe that you can honor your incarnation.
Paul says that the Jews should not keep the commandments. He says that Paul is...
I get that. And what I'm saying is, but he took Jewish ideas...
We're going on a tangent now, because
the point is, you can call it a tangent if you want, but we Jews face an existential crisis right now. We have Iran that's building a nuclear bomb that wants to wipe out Israel. We have a tiny little state that is second most hated nation on earth after North Korea. And one of the main reasons is, beyond our inability to really effectively engage in PR, one of the main reasons is there aren't enough Jews in the world. They're just, and
what
even if, okay, I'm explaining. We need to show the world that Jewish ideas have been formative, that they have sculpted the modern world. We need to show the world that we're a light unto the nations so that they take an interest in our survival, so they care whether Israel as a country survives, that the Jewish people as a nation survive, because Christians need to learn from Jews about their own faith in order to be enriched and to truly understand their own faith. That's why kosher Jesus is so vital.
You can't do that by saying the Jewish people are a curse. You can't say that what you put in your mouth, Mark chapter 7, does not defile you. You can't go in the throat. You can't say to the Roman governor Pontius Pilate that you are innocent in John 19:16, and the ones who gave me over to you, therefore they bear the great sin here. So you're like selecting. It's like, you know, you could take the Farrakhan speech and take out 10 seconds and say, yeah, look, he's a great guy because he said, be good to each other. I don't know. And then you're just taking out such a tiny sliver.
The analogy doesn't work. Farrakhan has a whole body of work that we know is attributed to him. And even if you select one or two pro-Jewish statements, it doesn't excuse all of the
negative statements.
What I show in Kosher Jesus is that we can apply scholarship to determining what Jesus said authentically and what is a later interpolation by Luke and editors that was inserted after the destruction of the temple. Oh, it's very easy because we know that. It's very easy. We know that the chronology of the Gospels is that we begin with Mark, we go to Matthew, we go to Luke, and we can actually see how the story evolves. We can actually see
how
certain quotes of Jesus are changed.
The later of what evolved, but you have not connected Mark to Jesus. That means, right, you can see the virgin birth entering Matthew and Luke, and you can see the divinity in John. We know that. Forget the other three Gospels. Mark is clearly the source of Gospel 2 and 3. The question is, you connect from any one of us, how you can certify that the Markean Jesus is a kosher Jesus. That's what I know. Forget anything about later.
And the book gives methodology by which I ascertain what I consider to be authentic,
what I consider to be a later interpolation.
We're going to have to break. Before we break, I just want to ask you this. What do you think about the criticism of Shmuley's book? You've seen that, right?
Oh, you're asking me now.
Yeah, I'm asking you up to you. Yeah,
I'm torn. I understand the book very well. I understand it. I mean, Markovia's book, The Mythmaker, is amazing. That's the foundation of it. But not that he's plagiarized. I'm not suggesting that at all. So, but the idea that kosher Jesus, you know, is to me appalling. I understand why people are so deeply outraged by it, and I'm not on their level to be able to make a decision. There are rabbis who feel that if you're proclaiming idolatry is permissible, then you have become a heretic. And that's something Shmuley has to deal with him.
Idolatry? Idolatry is permissible?
Go ahead.
It is clear, it is very clear that all of our sages held that a Jew who worships Jesus, and that's how 95%, 90% of the Christian world sees Jesus as a deity. He is one part of the triune Godhead. Worshipping him, therefore, is idolatry.
My book says that Jesus was not a deity, and it proves it from Scripture that he was not a deity. My book says that Jesus never saw himself as a deity. He refers to himself repeatedly as the Son of Man, Ben Adam. And in the New Testament, the M is capitalized, but you and I know it means Son of Adam. And it's the same appellation to which Ezekiel, Yechezkel refers to himself.
Look, that Shmuley and I don't disagree about. That is, it's very clear that the doctrine of the Trinity...
So I don't see what kind of heresy...
Unfortunately, the clock ticks. Rav Tovia Singer, Anthony Mitchell, we hope you join us again. Welcome back to the States and look forward to speaking with you.
Yeah, Tovia, thank you for calling, and I enjoyed the conversation very much. Thank you. God bless you, too.
Thank you.
Thank you, you too.